Hello, I'm Victoria Shepherd, and this week on Take a Break, I'm talking with Andrew Rain of Prairie River Network. Hello, Andrew.
Hey, Victoria, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you for coming in and talking with me.
Of course.
So, for the listeners, could you tell me what your role is at Prairie River Networks and how long have you been working with them?
I've been with Prairie Rivers Network for about a year or almost 2 years, depending on how you look at it. I was with them part-time for almost a whole year. So I'm a water resources engineer at Prairie Rivers Network. My background is in civil engineering. I have a bachelor's and master's degree, both from the University of Illinois. But I did get to choose my title, so it could have been kind of anything that I wanted to be, which is kind of nice. But I felt like water resources engineer is a fair, given my education background. So at Prairie Rivers Network, I work on I'm a part of our energy program, which mostly deals with the waste produced by coal power plants and how that is stored near rivers. And our Prairie Rivers Network is trying to advocate for getting that waste out of the rivers, out of floodplains, and into safe, protected areas so that it doesn't cause more pollution.
So would you say that's the mission statement of Prairie Rivers Network?
No, Prairie Rivers Network is, we're here to sort of advocate for rivers in general and clean water, not just rivers. I suppose we also do, lakes, rivers, groundwater, drinking water. We sort of cover everything. My individual role in the energy program is almost entirely focused on coal. But other people at Prairie Rivers Network work on very different things. So we have people working on the issue of Asian carp coming up the Mississippi River, which is an invasive species, and navigation issues. We have people working on developing habitat and land purchases for conservation. We have people working on national laws, like the recently the Waters of the U.S. rule, which happened maybe 6 months ago. There was sort of a redefinition of the Waters of the U.S., and we were involved in that fight on a national level. So we're sort of across the board advocating for water.
Okay. So tell me, what are some of the problems that you're seeing in Illinois specifically?
The way coal ash is what we're concerned about. And this is a substance that's produced when you burn coal. There's a number of different forms of it. So bottom ash, which is the stuff like if you made a campfire, bottom ash is what's left over. Fly ash, which used to be the ash that would fly into the air, which now due to improvements in clean air regulation is now also brought down and stored with the bottom ash as well. And things like flue gas desulfurization, waste streams, some other like boiler slag, some other like components that all sort of gets collected into this one thing that we call coal ash. And that gets stored near the power plants, mostly because they want to store it somewhere and storing it close makes sense. Unfortunately, most of these power plants are also on major rivers or lakes, water bodies.
And why is that?
And that's because they need cooling water. What you'll end up seeing is that they have like truly massive impoundments of an impoundment. I'll say that a lot probably, but an impoundment is essentially, they'll build a dam. They'll build, dam on four sides, and then they'll put a bunch of this coal ash inside of that dam. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about storing, millions of cubic yards. And for context, the Empire State Building is maybe approximately to fill up the Empire State Building. Would be about 1 million cubic yards, maybe a little bit less than that. But just to give a context of when I say a million cubic yards, like sort of what volume that is. So it's a lot of stuff. And there's 26 coal-fired power plants in Illinois. Some of them are closed, but they all have coal ash stored near their impoundments or near the plant in large impoundments.
So some of them are still active.
Yeah, so we have something around like 19 active coal plants in Illinois.
Okay. And in each of these places where there are the ash beds,
yeah,
what sort of average square footage or the cubic footage comparing, you gave the example of the Empire State, in each place, what amount are we talking about?
So that's going to vary. I would say like for ones that have been running, for 50 years, which is many of them, some of them are smaller if they're, in more, remote areas, smaller plants. But most of the time we're talking about maybe 3 million cubic yards, which is 2.5 Empire State Buildings. Yeah. And again, that, some places are going to have more than that. Some places are going to have less. It all depends on where you are.
Okay. Is there a specific area in the state that your organization is focused on right now?
Yeah. So we work across the state, but one of the plants that has really become the focus of our attention and really has been historically is the Vermilion Power Station on which is in near Kickapoo State Park in Vermilion County. And so that's a power plant that's actually closed. It was closed in 2011, but it's operating next to the Middle Fork of the Vermilion River, which is a national scenic river and the only national scenic river in Illinois. So it's sort of operating next to one of the most valuable and important water bodies in the state. And it has 3.3 million cubic yards of coal ash stored pretty much directly inside the floodplain of that river. And so what that means is the river, a river has a little valley. It's sort of where it's historically lived its entire life. You know, we're talking thousands of years. So, and it'll swing back and forth in that valley over, you know, geological timescales. And they've put the ash inside that valley, so next to the river. And in this case, even forming the bank of the river. So if you've ever rode the Middle Fork of the Vermilion River, or floated down the river, you would see this ash, and it would look like a green hill next to the just next to the river, because there's topsoil over there's some soil or grass growing on the top of it, but what you're looking at is actually a large impoundment of ash.
And you mentioned that this section of the Vermilion River is it a protected river?
Yeah, so it's a National Scenic River, which is a designation that's from the, it means that the Park Service gets to sort of keep an eye on it. So whenever anybody has to build or work inside the banks of the river, the Park Service gets to take a look at those plans. And very recently, there's actually been a construction project along the bank of one of these coal ash impoundments. There's three at this location. Along the bank of one of them, because the river has been eroding towards the impoundment, which is what rivers do, particularly when you build a impoundment in the floodplain of the river where it will be eroding. So what they've been seeing is a increase in the amount of erosion that became kind of alarming, to the point where they realized, okay, we need to go in and put in bank stabilization work. So along the we call it the New East Ash Pond, there's now, if you float down the river, you'll see a bunch of white rock, and that's been put in over the past couple weeks to reinforce that area. And we're not against the idea of, you know, we don't want that to spill. So we're not against them working and improving the impoundment or the banks. What our concern is that, you know, this is a Band-Aid. They're armoring the bank because the river's eroding towards their impoundment. Well, that's going to continue to happen, and it's going to happen in different locations. So if they're not thinking about what to do with this ash in the long run, if they're just going to armor this and armor this and armor this, and then at some point no longer be fiscally responsible for the area, that means that the problem is going to be left to the public, essentially. The property is actually directly across from Kickapoo State Park and Kennecook State Park. So essentially, either the county or the Department of Natural Resources owns most of this land across the river from this facility, and also a lot of the land north and south of the facility on that side of on its side of the river. So, you know, it seems like the fate of this land might one day be that it's in public hands.
If you're just joining us, I'm Victoria Shepherd, and this is Take a Break. This week, I'm talking with Andrew Rain from the Prairie Rivers Network about coal ash beds in Illinois. So why, you talk about erosion.
Yeah.
But why is this bad? What kind of damage is being caused?
Yeah, so the concern for erosion would be you have a dam which is stable given a certain slope and you know how much footing it has and you know sort of the geotechnical engineering terms for it. But what will happen is that if the river moves and starts cutting into that dam, you might get destabilization. And we're looking at impoundments that are 20 to 40 feet above the river. So imagine just a 20-foot tall hill. And if you get the river cutting into that, and then maybe you get a flood, and you have a weak point in that dam, the dam might fail. And then suddenly we have this ash being carried into the river. And coal ash spills have happened before. National attention was brought to the issue in 2008 when the Kingston spill happened in Tennessee. And that really sort of put a spotlight and made the EPA start saying, all right, we need to figure out, you know, what's the issue here? How much of this stuff do we have? What do we need to know about it? And that's really what has kicked off some legislation that's come by and a focus on it from the state level EPA. But those spills have caused a lot of damage.
What exactly is in the ash?
So the ash itself has a number of concerning constituents, a lot of heavy metals, things like lead, arsenic, things like boron, which may not be as harmful to people, but are major indicators of where ash is. Other things like selenium, which we don't really even know a whole lot about what limits people can handle. So the ash is not, you know, it's not, when water gets into the ash and carries it out into the river, you're getting essentially contamination. And that's actually what we're seeing is you can see along the riverbank. So this ash is directly on the riverbank. You can actually see sort of orange or orange staining on some of the rock there. And that orange staining is actually, it's iron. It's oxidized iron, you know, sort of like rust. But it's an indicator. It's indicating that the seeps that's coming out is carrying, you know, the bad juices from this coal ash into the river.
And if it's going into the river, is this a river where there is wildlife?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the river has its designation because of the valuable wildlife there. There's a lot of valuable wildlife. There's also, bald eagles are in the area.
Now, why would it affect the bald eagles?
It gets into like the little, so, you know, the little slugs or whatever in the water get sort of contaminated and then fish eat them. And then fish will eat a lot of those slugs and they'll slowly bioaccumulate these things. So bioaccumulation is what this is called. And it moves up the food chain in higher and higher concentrations. So the fish continue to consume these little guys and then the eagles start eating the fish, and everybody who eats somebody smaller, they can't get rid of this stuff. It just sits in their bodies. So eventually you can get levels of contamination that's lethal to the animal. Because if you consume a heavy metal, a lot of times your body just like tucks it away somewhere and doesn't know what to do with it.
Okay. So the plant at Middle Fork was closed down quite some time ago.
Mm-hmm. Oh, 2011.
2011. If there's no mining going on, what's the problem?
It's not mining. It's a coal-fired power plant, so energy generation.
Okay.
The problem is that, I mean, the waste is still there. So closing the plant just means that it's no longer producing more waste. But that's the problem in all these places, is that we have huge, huge volumes of waste that's still there. And we're actually having a national and a statewide conversation right now about what to do with it. And in many cases, the companies that own this ash or are responsible for it want to do something called cap in place. So that means that they want to build a somewhat impermeable layer and put it over the entire impoundment. And that will prevent rainfall from saturating the ash, and then that saturated ash sort of starting to contaminate both groundwater and, in the case of the Middle Fork, where the river is right there, the river. Concerns that we have with, you know, sort of like, oh, let's cap all of these and leave them in place, is twofold. One is that just stopping the rain from above doesn't mean that these ash ponds, which are not lined in the bottom, aren't still experiencing groundwater, or in many cases, and in the case in Vermilion, the groundwater is inside the ash. The ash has just become part of the landscape, and the groundwater table saturates maybe anywhere from 5 to 20 feet of this ash.
So capping is not necessarily a solution.
It's definitely not. We don't see it as a solution to, really anything, because it's not going to stop the pathways for contamination.
Okay, so what's the best possible scenario?
So we would like to see the ash moved out of the floodplain. So the plant itself is actually built essentially about maybe 60 to 70 feet. It's out of the floodplain. It's about 60 to 70 feet above where the river is. We would like to see the ash moved onto a storage facility on the plant, or whatever option that the company can determine that makes economic sense for them. But as long as it's out of the floodplain and in a landfill that's lined and has the proper groundwater monitoring and is, encapsulated in a safe way. I mean, the reality is that, you know, this is a waste substance that exists. It needs to go somewhere. You know, it obviously we can't just make it disappear. So the most responsible thing to do would be put it somewhere where we know it's not impacting water resources.
If you're just joining us, I'm Victoria Shepherd, and this is Take a Break. This week, I'm talking with Andrew Rain from the Prairie Rivers Network about coal ash beds in Illinois. Okay, so I suppose cost is involved here. Yeah. I'm guessing that how much would it cost to cap it, and how much would it cost to do what your hope is for the company to move it up to higher ground?
So the only cost analysis we have has been done by the company themselves, and they used it to justify the capping plan. And if you look at their analysis, the the removal is significantly more expensive. Capping is something around, I think, $10 million per impoundment. And there's three. And removal would cost something around, I think, $70 or $80 million. So we are talking about a significant price difference, but those are estimates that are made by the company themselves and not something that, you know, we've done. The risk of failure has never been monetized. So nobody has gone in and said, like, okay, if this fails, if we have a spill, what's going to be the cost? So that's sort of the question that isn't, you know, they say, oh, the cost of the cap, the cost of removal. Oh, look, the cap is so much cheaper. Well, that doesn't really answer the question. If the cap isn't going to do what it's supposed to do, if it's not going to successfully stop the seeping of contamination, and if it's also not going to get this ash out of the river, the floodplain, where one day, if it's still there, one day the river might decide that it wants to be where the ash is instead. And that means that you're going to have a major spill.
So you've got the what-if scenario.
There's a lot of what-ifs in the capping scenario. But in the removal scenario, you're no longer worried about it. The river can go wherever it wants. It can do its natural thing. And in the end, if you know, we're sitting here talking about this, in 100 years, the company is no longer going to exist, or it's going to look totally different. We don't know who's going to own this property, but the river is still going to be there, and it's still going to want to be eroding into these impoundments. And we've seen a bank armoring fail. We've seen the bank armoring that's currently there being, you know, eaten away by the river. It's a powerful force. Removal seems like the only option that makes sense in 100 years. And if we want to think on those timescales, which I think is a responsible thing to do, we really need to get it out of the floodplain.
Okay. So, without getting too political, do you think that your organization's advances, progress, will be impeded in any way given the new leadership of the United States?
Hard to say. Obviously hard to say. I mean, the new leadership of the United States has not been really clear on any issue. There's talk of abolishing the EPA, and that would be quite damaging, incredibly damaging. I mean, I think this would be one of hundreds of concerns if the EPA goes away. But, you know, there's hope that there's, you know, there's momentum and direction that is sort of irreversible. And we're hoping that we can keep that momentum going. What you're seeing in the Southeast is actually a lot of these coal ash impoundments are being moved. There's a group in the Southeast of the country that's getting Duke Energy to move a lot of their coal ash there, which is the company that owns most of the power in places like North Carolina. And so removal is really happening. And we think that we're sort of at a moment right now where we're deciding what we want to do with the ash. And so now is really a critical time because they're going to either cap it or they're going to remove it. I mean, once they cap it, getting them to remove it is going to be, you know, a whole nother fight. And if we would succeed, it would mean, you know, even more cost for them to have to remove the cap and then remove all the ash. So, you know, there's a real push to get it done right the first time. And there's currently there was a law, a national law that came out, gives some guidance on how to deal with coal ash. But we're really looking for Illinois to step up and have their own law. And there are a number of proposals before the Illinois Pollution Control Board, the body that would make this into law, of what to do with this ash. And you know, our group, our Prairie Rivers Network, and some of our ally groups are really hoping that we can get a stronger rule out of the Pollution Control Board. But the current EPA proposal, Illinois EPA proposal, is not as strong as we would have hoped, and it's missing a lot of like public participation that we thought would be, you know, really beneficial for communities to be able to say, hey, we don't want this in our community. But right now the public has a comment period, and those comments don't even need to be responded to. So you really wonder what, you know, if the public's going to be able to have a voice in this process.
If listeners out there want to learn more about Prairie River Networks and the work it's doing in Illinois, or they want to support the organization's efforts in any way, where can they go to get more information?
Yeah, I would go to our website, which is prairierivers.org. And there you can find a whole lot of information on a number of these different issues. We have a new website, actually, so hopefully it'll be pretty easy to navigate and find. You know, we work on more than just coal ash, but you'll be able to get to the coal ash information really easily as well. And actually, I made a map that I'm kind of proud of. So if you go to prairierivers.com/coal-ash-map, all one word, you can actually see where coal ash is across the state. And if you don't happen to not live in this area, you can find out if there's coal ash near you and find out a little information about those different coal ash sites.
Fabulous. So, again, that is prairierivers.org. go and check out Andrew's map and other information. You've been listening to Take a Break. I'm Victoria Shepherd, and I've been speaking with Andrew Rain of Prairie Rivers Network. Thank you so much for coming in, Andrew.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much, and I'll see you soon.